Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Spin the Rally Pod. I'm Lisa O'Sullivan, bringing you a Women in Motorsport special from Dirtfish.com. Carrying out for the whole of the month of March, we are taking a look at the progress made by the FIA's Women in Motorsport Commission, launched 13 years ago. What follows is a conversation between myself and Bex Williams, who I have had the pleasure of working with for nearly 20 years now. Now, my maths is a little bit rubbish, and so at the beginning, I did get my dates muddled up. I started in the World Rally Championship in 2002, not 2001, as I previously claimed. So just ignore that bit there. I didn't want to edit it, but sit back and enjoy a conversation with one of the great broadcasters in WRC, Bex Williams. I got myself a cup of tea because going on our history of production meetings, this, even though it's only going to be 45 minutes, because that's what it's going to be edited down to, I just wanted to be comfortable, Rebecca Williams.
Good luck with it being 45 minutes, Lisa O'Sullivan, because production meetings usually around about the 2 hour mark, and then we'd actually start the production meeting after we'd gossip, chatted, put the world to rights. Yeah. Then it was maybe 10-minute production meeting and see you next week.
And generally that was because we had to go somewhere else, eat, or other reasons that we needed to break up the meeting rather rapidly anyway. But yeah, that was that was a long time ago now, it feels, because, and I did call you Rebecca there, you're not Rebecca, you're Bex Williams, legend of motorsport broadcasting, because you are, you know, you've been at the forefront of rally broadcasting for some time now. I'm not going to say ages and ages because that would make you sound old and you're still only a mere snip of a thing.
Yes, no, true. But you're right. It has been a long time. And I did have the wake up call when I went to this year's Rally Sweden that actually was 2022 Rally Sweden, marking the 20 years since I started in the WRC full time. But I did 2 years prior to that in rallying. So, yeah. It was like, whoa, I started in the 90s. And you feel like the 90s is 10 years ago.
No, it was last century.
Shocking. Yeah, this is quite. And, you know, people like Kalle Rovanperä were born in that decade and or like the 2000s or whatever. And you're like, and your eye starts to twitch and you think it's been a long time.
But it doesn't feel like 20 years. And so that makes our relationship more than 20 years, because I think I bumped into you. I was dragged in by Greg Strange to do some end of stage reporting for local radio stations in the UK on Wales Rally GB 2001, I believe.
Yes. Yeah,
and
yes, you were.
Never had I been in a more unfamiliar and alien environment. I remember I thought, I'll put my rugby boots on so that I've got, you know, I've got decent footwear. Always remember my original journalistic training, which is make sure your feet are warm, which is the best piece of advice I can pass on to anyone, especially as well in motorsport. Got to be warm, got to be dry. And the other thing I thought, well, I should look relatively smart because I don't quite know if I'm interviewing people, I need to look smart. So I stood at the end of the muddy end of the stage in the car park in my nice coat, my nice sort of full length blue, petrol blue coat, which needed severe demudding afterwards. But I mean, you know, a couple of drivers in, after I realised I knew nothing about this sport, standing in the car park, I realised I loved it. And then I met you there, knowing everything, it seemed, about rallying at that point.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say that. That was still early days for me as well. I think my first rally was Wales Rally GB, or Network Q, Rally of Great Britain, to give it its full title, in 99. And that's when it was based in Cheltenham, Service Park in Cheltenham, and it went kind of into Wales, it went up into England, it did the country houses. It was, you know, proper rally. And that was my first ever rally event. And it was, you know, the biggest one on the championship calendar for anyone who's in the UK.
I mean, neither of us wanted to start at the bottom, did we, really? Let's just start with the big one.
No, let's just launch in. But I think that was kind of Greg's, you know, way. He did not, there was no, if you join Greg's company, there was no working your way up to anything. He would launch you into the deep end. And that was his true belief, that if you could do it, you would swim. You know, you're either going to sink or swim. And if you're no good at it, that's it, you're gone. But if you swim, then great, you continue on. And that's exactly what he did. It was throw us into the deep end. This weekend, you're going to be doing 30-second reports for radio stations around the UK. Maybe you'll do a bit of Five Live as well. BBC Five Live, you are kidding me. You are kidding me. But it was really nice because you had to, I liked the sport because I kind of, not that I'd grown up with the sport, I hadn't. Even though I'd done my first rally at the age of 4, there had been a big gap before I looked at another one. It was a passing interest. But, you know, I reveled in the whole experience of being able to work at Wales Rally GB that year. And as soon as the bug hits you, like you said, you know, you turn up at your first event, you absolutely adore it, it gets you, and you want more and more, and you want to learn more and more. And I found that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to understand the sport more and more, just, you know, not from just flicking on the TV and watching BBC highlights. I wanted to understand the cars. I wanted to understand, crucially, I think for me, the people behind it. That was the important thing. The people, why they would want to go and do a sport like this, why they would want to risk their lives over the course of 3 or 4 days of competition, and the real characters behind the sport. I think that's what drew me in more than the cars itself, because I think a lot of people will look at it and go, oh, it's the cars. For me, it wasn't that. It was the people behind it that drew me in.
Yeah, it's always about the stories, I think, for both of us as well. Mm. And I think because we are talking about women in motorsport as part of this conversation between the pair of us, it's not entirely a production meeting. We might have to have that afterwards. But I think because from my point of view, and I think maybe for you as well, being launched in as we were, there wasn't an opportunity before that for us to think, well, this isn't a sport that I'm going to be able to cover because I'm a woman. There aren't any, I can't see any women. I can't see my pathway through that, because we were just in it straight away from that point of view. I'm just going to fast forward a little bit more to 2009 and the FIA launching its Women into Motorsport Commission and the initiative that has been running now for 13 years. And because we've got this gulf of time where we were in the sport before the commission, we've been in the sport after the commission. If somebody was being launched perhaps into the sport now, they've got a long history to look back and say, well, no, but women have been doing this all the time. Whether it is, you know, under the car, designing the car, driving the car, co-driving the car, talking about the cars, standing, and not just being an auto cutie or being a hostie. Those weren't, they were kind of the roles that were prominent, but the roles that are available now, they were potentially always there. But would you say that in the 13 years post the commission, that things have changed that radically?
I think things have changed, and things were changing when I joined the sport. You know, to look into the journalism aspect of it, there weren't many female journalists. I remember one other lady, Andrea Neumeier from Germany, who was there. Sam Lloyd, who also worked as part of our company with Greg. And that was around about it, really, in our circle. So there was no one you could look at in the press room and go, she's similar to me, because it simply didn't exist. It was, you know, it's a male-dominated press room, a male-dominated sport in every sense of every level, from journalism to mechanics to engineering to the competitors. The only place where there were more females than males potentially was in PR departments. That was a strength with women. But other than that, they weren't really reflected in the sport. But I think when I came in 99, you noticed it, but I never, and it's never been something that I've personally felt, and not to say that other women wouldn't, but it's never something that it was an issue for me or a problem for me, because I knew I wanted to work in sport, and I had worked in rugby prior to that, which again, it was male rugby that I'd worked in, and female rugby was there, but not as well publicised, or certainly not on television back in the day. You never saw a female.
Still have female the rugby argument match that we're not putting it on TV because nobody wants to watch it, which is now finally flipped because they've put it on TV and people, funnily enough, want to watch it.
What a strange one that is. But it was always there. And I don't know, I think it was an acceptance maybe at the time that there was always going to be more men. I think things, since we have had FIA Women in Motorsport, there's been strategies put in place. There's been strategies put in place for younger women, certainly, to understand that they can enter the motorsport world. Girls on Track is a phenomenal, I can't think what the word is right now, and words are my thing. There we go. Incredible project.
Projects.
And, you know, motorsport is always going to be the sport which you need a bit of money to get into. Sadly, it's not all, and it's never going to be. I don't think it's ever going to change. It's not something like, you know, football or even rugby, where your talent alone can propel you into a team. You will need to have some kind of, your family will need to have some kind of money behind them, or get some kind of grant or whatever to be able to compete. And that's a completely different kettle of fish to talk about. And that's also a hurdle for, I think, female competitors. And then Girls on Track comes along and they're going out there and they're trying to find female competitors. And I think the gaming world, a lot of people are against, you know, gaming. I'm not at all. I'm fully for it, because that is now the new vehicle for finding young talent behind the wheel and starting to bring them on. And gaming can be done on very little budget.
That's changed.
So, yeah, it has changed. I think it's changed the whole complexion of actually getting into motorsport. And, you know, we have rally drivers who have come from a gaming background, who've then got into circuit racing and then moved on to rallying. Sean Johnson is the perfect example of this, an American driver who's competing in the support categories in WRC. He has been a circuit racer, but, you know, he came from a very strong gaming background. And I think we'll see more of that in the future. And I'm completely all for that. But to go back to your original point, I think, yes, things have changed and are changing, but it's never, probably in our lifetime, going to be a quick enough change, because unfortunately it's not happening overnight. It's a gradual process. But I think, you know, what Michelle Mouton did as head of FIA Women in Motorsport, her drive, her passion has really steered the ship and created something which is only going to grow and grow. And hopefully then more female competitors, or female mechanics, female engineers, female anything. You know, I think, and that's one thing to kind of to push out there. You might look at women in motorsport and think, oh, it's all about just the competition, but it's not just that. You know, the whole board is made up of people who do various jobs in motorsport. And there are many out there. Every single job a man does, a woman can do. You know, there's no question in that. There isn't. But I think sometimes, you know, women can feel, oh, maybe I can't do that. Maybe it's too much coming into a male-dominated space. And I hope through the fact that people like myself, yourself, are out there and doing these kind of jobs is a bit of inspiration, but also a confidence booster for people to know that, yeah, they can go and do it. There is no reason why they can't. I mean, I don't come from a motorsport background at all. My parents didn't drive a car. For the love of God, no one in my family drove before.
But you had a car.
We had a car. We were gifted a car by my grandfather, and it was an Austin Allegro that sat outside the house And I had two older brothers. My eldest had no interest in driving. I say he had no interest in driving. He could drive. He did drive. But he had no interest in passing his test to officially drive. And, you know, he's quite a bit older than me. So, you know, back in the 60s, it was all a little bit fly, wasn't it? You can get behind the wheel and not actually have a license. But yeah, he really did have no interest in driving. He hasn't driven a car since the 60s. And then the brother slightly older than me, he really wanted to drive, but never kind of got round to it. So we had this beautiful car sitting outside. And I would go and sit in it and you know, just kind of move the wheel around. And the
you do love
and...
driving. You do love
I
driving.
I do.
You hate being a passenger.
I hate being a passenger. I'm such a control freak in the car. I have to drive. And I wanted to learn everything about it. I didn't understand what gearbox did. Or I'd think, how do you know when to change gear when you're in? And I wanted to learn so much about it. And I think that's where my passion for it came from. It's like a reverse, isn't it? It's... I didn't have any cars in my life. I didn't have any motorsport in my life, but yet I craved it. You know, my brothers took me to a rally when I was four, which was an incredible experience. And I really don't remember much. And I tell people, and it's totally true. The only thing I really remember is lights in the darkness, in the forest, and my wellies that I really wanted to wear. And they were these multicolored wellies, which I still remember to this day because they were so fabulous. And then there was this gap, this period of my life where my brothers would watch rallying on TV. And I would, you know, follow along. And I remember being in university when Colin McRae won Rally New Zealand and following that on CFAX. Because I was interested.
Yes, CFAX. For those of
yeah,
you
for a global audience, global audience. Explain CFAX, please.
So it was, there will be equivalents around the world, but I remember people watching football matches on CFAX as well. And it was basically a page on your television that would update every minute or maybe 2 minutes. So you would basically stare at a screen that would, let's use a football match because it's slightly easier to explain. So you'd have, say, Chelsea nil, Tottenham nil. And you'd keep looking at it and it would refresh every 2 minutes. And then all of a sudden, one of them would score a goal. And they'd be like, yes!
Yeah, yeah. That's basically it. There would be a little rally report, which updated on CFAX. And, you know, that's how you got your rallying kind of fix. And then you would watch the highlight show maybe a week later. Maybe
absolutely,
weeks later.
Yes.
It took a while. You know, it's, you know, this day and age now, everything is instant. Back then, it wasn't. So, you know, university life for me, I was watching bits and pieces, but university life took over. And, obviously working exceptionally hard to get my first class degree. And
you were going to head off to be one of the greatest film directors of all time, I believe.
Yeah, that was that was the absolute
plan. Well, still is, obviously, still in the back of the head. You can do
you know
that
what?
As well.
Could happen.
Multitask.
It could happen, Lisa. It could happen still. I wanted to be... So I think my teenage years were a bit mixed up because I love drama and acting and it was one of my strengths. And I was supposed to, that the original plan was to go off to the Welsh School of Music and Drama, which is one of the best in the whole of the UK in Cardiff. And I remember going there on work experience. You had a week of work experience in your teenage years. And I went there for a week and I absolutely hated it. It was full of people so far up their own backsides. I couldn't handle it. I was like, I am so not this person. I'm so not a lovey. And it was everything about acting that I hated all in one place. I was like, I can't come here. I can't be with these people. I'm going to kill them. And then I'll be in jail for the rest of my life. My future be over. So I thought, you know, okay, maybe acting isn't for me, but I wanted to be creative in that kind of sphere. And, you know, I loved films growing up. I used to watch very obscure films. And I thought, okay, maybe I could make films. And I found a course, which was in Exeter University, which was a mixture of journalism, filmmaking, editing, photojournalism. This is how long ago it was, learning how to make websites. So this is really new. So this is really exciting. Wow, websites, amazing.
I will be the person that makes everybody's websites. They will not be able to make it themselves.
It was such a varied degree. And the minor of it was theatre art. So I kept a bit of drama in there. And that was my plan, was to kind of be behind the scenes making things. I wanted to produce. And that's really what I wanted to do. And after that, after I finished in in uni, I came straight home and remember sending letters off to BBC Wales to say, I want to come and work with you. And I did work experience there for a week and was really lucky that the people I worked with said, we'll put your name forward for other things. And then I had other departments at BBC Wales calling me back, the drama department, music department. I ended up working in radio there as well as a announcer for a quiz. So I would do the scores and introduce the teams. And it was all this varied things that I loved doing. And I worked in the news department very briefly there. But it was in the sports department that really piqued my interest when I went there. And it's kind of the buzz, I think, of live sport. And I was kind of perfectly placed, I think, because at the time we were building up to the Six Nations and there was a lot of activity. And I thought, I like this because this is positive stories. This is human achievement. This is inspirational stuff. And I'd like to, know a bit more about this, maybe get involved in this. And that's where the sports journalism came in then.
Well, the best thing about sport, as far as I'm concerned, is you get a beginning, a middle and an end. It may not be the end that you want.
Yes.
And if you're covering it, it's brilliant as a storyteller because there will always be some drama in there, even if nothing happens. And, you always have a big finish, ready for you to go there. I kind of want to talk about, we've mentioned Greg Strange, who was an absolutely unique individual, had so many brilliant ideas about taking technology forward. So you're mentioning there about making a website, technology. The World Rally Radio, as Greg set it up, was ahead of its time. It was technology that I think still to this day, people don't understand how few people were actually around in the day-to-day running of the radio station that basically was informing the teams. It was informing fans. It was informing families back home. It gave everybody an opportunity to actually be that bit closer to the rally. And for a number of years, it was the best way to stay in touch with the World Rally Championship because it was possible to hear at the end of the stage the stories from the drivers about why the car only had three wheels or why they'd lost a big passage of time in the middle. And you were the voice that was behind that. You were the one who was holding it together and, gradually bringing on board extra bits of technology. This hasn't helped you, Bex, to be honest, because you proved that it is possible to do about 16 things at once, which now has become the norm. So everyone's like, Bex Williams can do it. So he's like, okay. So I'll just try and get the broom out and sweep the floor at the same time as I'm doing the other 16 things. How did it feel? I know from working with you how excited you always were about and still are about the start of an event. Has that changed at all? But knowing that basically you guys, were part of a team that was changing the way that sport was being covered.
Do you know what? When I think back to that time, it was when it started. Even before it actually started, at least the year before, Greg was a visionary. You're right. He wanted to make sure that rallying could be reached by the people around the world. And that, that's what he wanted.
And not just by phoning a telephone line as well, which is another thing that people used to do.
Yes, that's right.
Find out what the result was.
That's right. Exactly. There would be a premium line you'd have to ring. Cost you an absolute fortune to find out that, McRae or Burns were in the lead of the rally or crashed out or whatever. The year before, I remember him getting the idea for it. He was traveling the world for BBC Five Live at the time and doing radio reports. And he wanted more. He wanted to be able to provide more. And WRC.com was launching in 2002, the brand new website. And I remember him sitting down in the offices in Cardiff and saying, this is my idea. And he'd spoken with Chris, the technical guru of the company. And I want to run a radio station on every event, which broadcast the length of the event. And I remember saying to him, okay, and we were in a car actually. And we were in a car, we were driving somewhere and he was telling me this, like, okay, great. He said, and we'll just, we'll have guests in, we'll be able to talk, they'll give out times, inform people. And I was like, right, okay. I said, that sounds like a, you know, long time to be broadcasting for. He said, yeah, yeah, no, it will be. It will be. It'll be a big challenge. Okay. I said, so who are you thinking to, you know, staff this to do it? And he was like, well, you'll be the presenter, of course. And I was like, you, sorry, what? Do you want to blow back up there, cowboy? You want me to talk for 10 hours a day on rallying? When previously, okay, I'd, you know, just done very short radio reports. You know, you kind of know to a certain extent what you're talking about. But the thought of talking for that length of time during a day and it just being me with a microphone and Chris on some buttons and some faders was very, very scary. But Greg had got the bit between his teeth, and they did a bit of a trial run at San Remo the previous year, just him and Chris to test the technology to see if it would work. And then Rally Monte Carlo 2002, we launched it. At least I'm trying to remember if you were there with us in 2002 or not.
Not three, for Monte, I think. Not for, yeah, yeah, 2003. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember it was myself, Sam Lloyd.
Sweden was my first overseas event.
Yes, in the famous zip-up ski suit, which I'll tell everyone about shortly.
Thank you. Yeah, great.
yeah, there was, I think, myself, Sam, Kerri-Anne, Chris, Greg. There was five of us set to work on the radio station during the weekend. And I remember glancing, we arrived at Nice Airport and we had to wait for Chris, who was coming in with all the equipment that we needed for the weekend. And he was super stressed about, you know, the fact that he had to bring all this equipment from
the joys of a carny.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking, oh, it can't be that much equipment. I remember the doors opening of arrivals, and he comes out with two big cases, two big trolleys, sorry, filled with flight cases. I think there were eight flight cases in total of equipment. And I'm thinking, how the hell are we going to sort all of this? And we get to the service park. We're shown the tiniest room possible in a truck where we're going to be based for the weekend. Chris works throughout the night to get everything set up. And cut a long story short, it all worked. And we managed to work the radio station. And then, you know, we carried on throughout the year. You came in at some point during 2002, I think maybe for Wales Rally GB.
Yes, I'm trying to work out because I think
2003 Sweden, I remember the ski suit.
So 2000,
and you telling Greg how to de-mister a windscreen, which really didn't go down very well.
Hate driving in a car where you can't see through the windows and somebody's going and they're talking to you and looking at you and not looking at the road, but they can't see it anyway because the windows are all misted up. But no, so it was 2002 we met, because I think 2002... in the summer was when I covered Wimbledon for you, which 20 years on, I'm still doing.
Yes. Yeah. 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 We'll let that one slide past quite easily. And there it's gone. Yeah. yeah. So it was a scary thing. I remember going on air and not quite wondering how we were going to do it, because we didn't have stage end reporters back in at that time. There just simply wasn't the technology to be able to have someone at the stage ends and hear them properly.
Well, I don't think mobile phones were actually affordable at that point.
Exactly.
To make a phone call.
They existed, but abroad, impossible to be able to have done that. So, you know, that happened quite a few. Well, it happened the next year in 2003. We worked out a system to be able to do that with the help of, you know, genius company Glen Sound, who were amazing. But the fear was very real at Rally Monte Carlo, and the fact that we did it, got through it, and we received all these emails of people who were listening.
People listened, yeah. You build it, they will come.
This is what we were genuinely worried about, was that we've got all this equipment, we've got all these people here to do the job. Will people listen? And the answer was a resounding yes, they would listen. And, you know, back in the day, the coverage was, you know, you look at it now in comparison to what we did eventually on the radio. It was quite basic because we're just there talking about times. We'd get some guests in. When the drivers came back to service, we'd go out and interview them live. And we did all that with radio mics, and it all worked. And it all worked fine. And, yeah, it was a great experience to be part of all that. And it was, I think, for Greg, for myself, for Chris, it was very much our baby. You know, we were there at the start. It was always our ideas moving it forward and how we could progress with it. And it was a great thing to be part of. And I think for a lot of people, who listened, there was, I know I used to get feedback, certainly from some people in the service park, be like, oh, it's nice to hear a female voice. It's nice to hear a female voice talking about rallying, because the coverage had been male dominated.
I think the difference as well to having a female voice on, and especially with radio, when we had so many listeners that would join us for most of the weekend, it felt like family as well. And the rally family does feel like family anyway.
Absolutely.
And it was, the sport was being covered in a way you couldn't cover it like a male commentator doing a football match for 10 hours a day. It needed a far more relaxed and comfortable voice, which is what you've always brought. And you've always brought warmth, which is always brought out the best of your interviewees as well. I remember the years of I'm going to sit on the sofa and talk to, where you would go and find someone to find a nice lengthy interview that we would be able to play throughout the weekend to give us a chance to get some breath. You would, you know, be able to draw breath for 20 minutes, perhaps go and freshen up, shall we say, get some food down you, because that was also something that didn't happen very often. But the respect that you managed to you have a knack of winning people over, even when you're sitting with them on the sofa and getting them to answer awkward questions. So I do remember particularly the Jarmo Leitinen interview where he was talking about taking his clothes off at some point at a stage end, but he wasn't taking the clothes off at the stage end. That was
It was a myth. They'd rolled in Sweden. That's what it was. And they tried to get the car back onto four wheels, which they did, him and Mikko Hirvonen. But they were bogged down in snow. And there was this urban legend that suddenly appeared that Jarmo Leitinen had taken off his overalls to put under the wheels to give them traction to get out of the snowbank.
That's amazing. Wow.
I know, this floated around. So it was, as soon as they got back to service, I had to ask him, you know, whether he'd taken his clothes off or not.
Yes.
Sadly, it was a no.
It wasn't the sofa. It wasn't on the sofa. But a subsequent interview, I think I'd turned it into a jingle so that we could just drop it in any time, really. The sofa interviews, I remember there was a great one with Colin McMaster talking about photographing rallies. It was another dimension to the rally that we were able to add as well, that it wasn't just about the times and what's going right and what's going wrong for drivers, but more about the people who were part of the family and making their year travelling around on the WRC calendar.
Yeah, I think that was the beauty of radio. We had, you know, radio is always the more personal format, really, but we had time. We had a lot of time to fill, and you know, the people who know that better than anyone else are me and you, because as our producer,
Rally Mexico,
you would be there for the whole duration, and so would I.
It wasn't Rally, was it Rally Poland, which was the one where we had
Rally
an entire
Poland.
Morning cancelled?
Rally Poland, yeah, they went, it was the year they went into Lithuania for the morning,
there
and
we
every
go.
Single stage was cancelled. And I think at the end of that day, I punched the air with delight and someone took a photograph of it, and I still have it. And, you know, I know it's blurred because I'm just like, thank God that day is over. But you
because
and
it was
I
the
had,
Friday.
To, had to fill that time. Yeah, it was the Friday. So we had nothing to replay, nothing to go back on. It was just us talking and me dragging every soul that was left in the service park in. We did all the team bosses. I think we even did the chef from Citroen as well.
Yeah,
it was just like anyone that can come in to talk, please talk. And that was the beauty of my job and your job. We were there for the whole duration. Stage end reporters could... You know, they would be running around and they would be frantic as well. But at some point, they could go and have a nice lunch. Whereas
George and Colin were genuinely always, and anyone who listened,
send us pictures of a nice lunch
as
well.
We had an amazing cafe. Oh,
yeah,
really?
We had a great seafood time, right? Thanks, boys.
Still in the same seat.
We haven't moved, you've been going to me, we need more. We find more people in the service park to talk about. And I've been running around like a blue arse fly. So, you know, they were hard days. They were really enjoyable days, don't get me wrong, but they were brutally hard days because you were filling pretty much every moment. I remember when we first started as well, because Greg was very vocal about, you know, the World Rally Radio, as it was called then, being, you know, unique. And he was right and he was wrong, because radio stations on rallying are not a new thing. You know, they've existed in Rally Finland, for example. Wales Rally GB used to have their own radio station.
But the Netherlands truly, as well, in Belgium.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. People, you know, a rally radio is not a unique thing. But what was unique about what we provided is that we did it at every event around the world. And people like, you know, the rally radio in Finland is backed by YLE, YLE. It's the national broadcaster. It's like the BBC for us doing rally radio. So they had the full weight of all the technology, all the funding, the budgets to be able to do it, where we were scrabbling for every piece of budget we could get. That was always a huge concern. But yeah, I'm going off on a course now and talking about radio to the end of time.
But I think
I could do.
What was quite clear, and being a woman at that point was irrelevant because you were the voice of the radio station. And listening, as I have done, to some of the interviews that have been on dirtfish.com during March in Women in Motorsport Month, Pernille Solberg, Michelle Mouton, these great women who have been lucky enough to grow up in different countries where the experience of being a woman in sport is different. So Pernille Solberg in particular, her dad a motocross legend, you know, her husband a great rally driver, her son now a brilliant rally driver as well, has never really thought of herself as anything more than part of the team. Her gender has played very little part in her experience of motorsport. It certainly hasn't held her back. It hasn't forced her to decide to take one route over another because of her gender. And I kind of feel, having grown up in a country where gender is very much still a part of what roles you can take, and as a sports journalist in this country, there's so much work that I have missed out on because I'm lucky enough now to be working in commentary, but it's taken me a long time to be able to get that and get over a hurdle where people turn around and say, people don't want to hear a woman commentating. People don't want to hear a woman's voice. People don't really understand if women are talking about sports. And that's coming from other sports. It's not coming from motorsport, which has always felt very friendly and I've felt very welcome and at home and able to just crack on and do my job. Do you feel that having been able to work with, you know, great people like Michelle Mouton and Pernille and stuff like that, that there is a different way of tackling it nationally? So I think we're almost getting there in this country. We're getting to thinking about it, but equality is still not there, obviously. But we're moving in the right direction.
I think we are moving in the right direction. You're right. Equality is still not there. And will we see it in our lifetime be completely equal on that score? I hope so. You know, I'm really thrilled to be able to hear and see female commentators in many, many different sports now, when that wasn't the case back in the day. I say back in the day, it's back when I started. Even in motorsport, you know, I feel the same as you. It was always a really incredible welcome. And initially when I started, I did feel, you know, slightly intimidated because
I was going to say, was it perhaps also that you didn't know whether or not it was a safe space?
Not, do you know what? I wouldn't say that. No, I think for me, it was about the knowledge. And even though I may come across as a very confident person, I'm not. You know, that's all a bit of an act. Not all the time. You know, I do have a huge amount of confidence in what I do now. But back then, you know, I was thrust very much into a spotlight, and every word that came out of my mouth, if any of those words were incorrect, I would freak out. If I got something wrong, if, you know, I read a situation wrong or didn't understand technically something, which even, you know, the greatest motorsport journalist may not understand, I was very hard on myself. And I didn't have anyone in the world of women then to be able to go to. However, I didn't see a difference between myself and a male journalist. And there were so many male journalists at the time who were incredibly encouraging. The late, great David Williams, who used to write for Motorsport News, was one of the people that I would be able to go and sit with, talk about, you know, drivers, or what does this mean when this happens, or we're in an awkward situation now in terms of strategy and tactics. It, you know, explain this to me a little. I could go and ask him that, and he would sit down with good grace and talk about things with me. So I never felt, oh, I'm on my own here, because I was surrounded by a lot of journalists who were happy to help. You know, there are some people, like in any walk of life, in any sport you're going to, there are going to be people who are not very nice to you or are jealous of what you are doing. And the classic, I could do it better if I was in that role. I've come across that quite a few times. And that's always been from the male gender rather than
it's female interesting,
gender.
Isn't it? Because that is actually nothing to do with gender, but it is.
Yeah,
it is. I've heard the same thing as well. And funny enough, when I was in China recently, two young lads were sitting and they were bemoaning the fact. One of them said, oh, well, I went for that job interview, but there was a woman there. She had exactly the same qualifications as me and they gave it to her. And I thought,
well, it's like, wow,
welcome to our world. You know, it's because she was a woman.
Even recently, there was, I won't name names here, but there was a sports journalist who works in our world who had put up a message on a social media platform saying that, you know, pointless me trying to even go for work. If I'm not a woman, I'm not going to get anywhere. How has it come to this? And I thought, well, you just look back 30, 40 years ago, and if you're a woman trying to actually get into any kind of, then, you know, that was a female experience back then.
I suspect that person glanced around the working environment, he'd still see a largely male presence.
Yeah, and
we're talking diversity as well here. Yes, I'm talking about women in motorsport, but a largely white male presence as well. So diversity needs to creep in all levels of
sports. Absolutely. I fully agree with you. And sometimes I feel, you know, we're talking about gender specifically now because that's the entire point of this chat. But in my own personal experience, in my work environment, I don't see a difference at all. I don't feel a difference because I have always strived to be as best I can. I'm not a competitive person by any stretch of the imagination. The only person I want to compete with is my own level of what I want to get to. And I knew that I just wanted to be as good as I could possibly be at my job. And not having a basis of comparison in my sex, I just, you kind of put the blinkers on and just go, right, I'll do all my research. I have full respect for the drivers and everyone I'm working with. I try and find out as much as I can about them, chat to them, and not just keep it as a work relationship, you know, to have a friendship with people. You're traveling in a huge bubble and you're doing it, you know, 13, 14, at one point, 16 times a year with 16 WRC events. You know, you're thrown together with these people. You know, you need to get to know them and bring their stories out. And I think the only person I've ever had competition with has been myself. And I'm very lucky because I know it's not the same experience for other women. You know, I've been very lucky in that I haven't been or ever felt threatened by males in our sport. There have been occasions where certain things have been said, but you know, you just put it down to those people being arseholes, and they could be male or female arseholes, doesn't matter. You know, that's it, plain and simple. But I understand that, you know, there are women who are trying to get into motorsport that are coming up against it and coming up against a sexism which really shouldn't be there in this day and age. It's archaic. I think Molly Taylor has a great line she said to me last year when I interviewed her, which when we were talking a little bit about kind of male-female motorsport balance and the fact that it isn't very balanced, unfortunately. And she said in her mind...
Of course, our current champion in Extreme E.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure there are many championships to come for her as well. You know, she said she's always thought and always because she had a strong, you know, her mother, Coral, is a, you know, strong female leader, competitor herself. You know, there's no gender. The clock doesn't know what sex you are. The timing clock does not care if you're male or female. It is just you, the car, you go. And, you know, that's a great way of putting it. In terms of competition, you know, the clock doesn't recognize what sex you are. But, you know, she was very frank in admitting that, yeah, when it comes to sponsorship, females are on the back foot. It's a different world. And, you know, it has to change.
Finally, what advice would you give? It's a horrible question. I hate this question. When somebody says it to me, I think, oh, God, that's a horrible question. But it is kind of an important question. From my point of view, I know that coming through the way that I've done it as well, like you, I've probably been a little too hard on myself, ready to criticise myself when others have lumped in, because for all the reasons you've said, it's easier to actually just put somebody down than admit your own failings. The piece of advice I think I would pass on to any young women that are looking to get into sport is to believe in themselves and to not be unduly hard on themselves while still trying to be the best they can be.
Yeah, ditto. I completely echo that. I wish, you know, looking back, I'd had a bit more self-belief at the start of my career. I was very lucky that if I did have a moment of doubt, I could sit down with my mother and I'd tell her, and then she'd just turn around and go, she would always say something like, what are you talking about? You're bloody brilliant. You're fabulous. You know, really kind of trying to beat
you up. I can hear her.
And, yeah. And you'd be like, okay, not that I ever believe that I'm bloody brilliant or I'm fabulous, but sometimes it just takes a couple of words to kind of reboost you, because it's very easy. It can be, I think, you know, regardless of gender, when you are working hard to be the best you can be at a specific role, and it's very much out there for the public to rip apart as well, if they want to. You're very exposed. I'm not sat there writing a press release. I'm there using my own voice, my own words, my own take on
against
things.
The clock.
Against the clock. And you know, people can rip you apart if they want to. I've been very lucky in that, you know, yes, you have the occasional people that will say some nasty things, but it's been mainly positive over the years. You always remember the nasty comments, however. You know, you can have 1,000 positive, lovely things and one person says one thing and you remember that. But back at the start, yes, more confidence, more self-belief that I can do this job successfully, and love the job. And I think that's another factor of it. When you do come into a motorsport role, it has to be the right fit for you. And you have to have a genuine love for what you're doing, for it to reflect. If you're doing something in my line of work where you are expressing yourself, you know, if you don't really feel for something, it's going to show. And hopefully through all the years I have given, you know, impassioned broadcasting, entertaining broadcasting, to the people who have listened and to the people who have watched now, in a brand new era of what we're into with All Live and everything being a visual fest. That's, you know, a different beast to talk through as well. But I'm so glad that, you know, people have that now, the ability to be able to watch and see everything that we saw as dots and times just, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Things are changing, and, you know, change is a good thing.
A massive thank you to Bex Williams, lead commentator at WRC.com, for taking the time to speak to us here on Dirtfish.com. There is so much more content on the website for our Women in Motorsport Month. Be sure to check all of that out. And while you're there, why not subscribe to the podcast?